You are listening to episode 82 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. The next wearable tech, the Thunderbelt. Welcome to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. This is episode 82 of the yet-to-be-named podcast show. My name is James Furlough. My brother is not here because he is off in Cabo this weekend having fun. So instead, I have with me a very dear friend, David Perry.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for joining me. So I know David through Hewlett Packard, so we'll be giving all sorts of insider secrets this week. No, we won't, because we both want to keep our job.
But you should buy HP Original Ink.
Yes.
Just a little plug there.
Exactly. And toner, by the way, too, if you like to go that way.
If you have the time.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, my name is James. I do work for HP. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. David, would you like to give a similar disclosure?
I agree. I concur.
Well said. So this entire thing is off HP's record, for sure. If you would like to chat with us online or, you know, wherever, you can reach me on Twitter. My handle is at James Furlough. And where would you like people to contact you?
Hit me up on Twitter, at Dutch726.
Dutch726. Perfect. We will have them do that. So as you guys know, every week we talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera. As Matthew likes to say, it is the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing, and so much other random stuff that we like to talk about. If you like that, you can find us at furloughbros.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at furloughbros. We're on Facebook, Google+, all that fun stuff. You can subscribe to this entire feed, or we do break this podcast into shorter clips so they're in digestible chunks for you to enjoy. So we should check that out. But on that note, we should talk some tech.
Which
there was a little bit of stuff happening this week, for sure. And believe it or not, the very first piece that I read this week was one that you shared on Monday, having to do with printed pages and touch screens. So what's up with that?
I think there it's interesting. So people keep trying to figure out ways to make the printed page more digital, linking the digital bits to the analog physical paper and being able to kind of click on things and touch things and be able to go from a piece of paper that can recognize images and links and that sort of thing and be able to actually touch and use them, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, which is – I'm okay with that if it means more people – print. But I mean, you know, like, you know, we step aside from the fact that that's how I get paid. you know, I agree with you. I think that there is this huge need and divide to kind of connect these two worlds that we have, which, you know, for the most part are separated except for an HP printer.
Yeah, I think this one's interesting. There's a lot of R&D that's happening, you know, in many companies to kind of how this works. And, you know, it's pretty pretty standard technology of like using a webcam and using a projector to kind of look down at the piece of paper, do optical recognition to recognize what the heck's going on with that paper and then be able to do cool stuff with it. But I think it's interesting to be able to you know, for example, older like textbooks or something like that, or books that could recognize images in like a kid's textbook, and notice that that picture is a picture of Mount Krakatoa or something like that, and then you press you can press the button and it would show you videos of Krakatoa exploding or something like that, or something awesome happening a little
more. That's a very specific example there.
I just thought I'd throw that out there. My daughter's having volcanoes.
That's cool. As it should be. I like it. So in this one, like you said, it was very like it was very rough, right? And I think I remember at the end of the video, they were like, so the next thing would be nice to have people actually use it for real things instead of like doing, you know, just kind of lab demos. Do you think that this is something that's actually going to happen? Or, you know, is this like, you know, maybe 50 years in the future, this might be cool?
No, I think it's going to happen. I mean, HP already has one stuff out there that can link augmented reality photos to paper and be able to detect the photo and that sort of thing. So I think that technology will naturally evolve in being able to recognize things on your environment. So not just paper, but objects and items and things in your house or in the world, and be able to link that to digital content.
That makes sense. So, do you think, you know, obviously they're using a huge apparatus, but for me, this really gets interesting when you're talking about linking and recognizing objects when it is, let's see how general can I keep this, something on your body that kind of goes with you the entire time and allows you to just, it's detecting where you're looking at something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it'll happen in a couple different ways. I think the camera in your pocket, the camera that has a computer behind it, enables all sorts of technology like that. And so when you're talking about like mobile phones and tablets and that sort of thing. And then I think the other way to think about it, which is way Fujitsu is showing this off, is kind of like a light table, kind of a la Microsoft Surface, where you're putting it on some pedestal stand thing, and it's got a camera pointing down on it and can recognize those shapes and that sort of thing, which is not super portable, but
not today, but no. That's okay. Huh? Yeah. Okay. No, I thought that was pretty cool. Something that I'd love to play with it. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting on like, being able to, I like the idea of kind of looking at physical objects and using that to kind of like go back and forth easily between digital and physical. So they were showing like you could literally draw and select and clip a picture or a video or a bit of text. And so like if you had in your workspace, you know, like hey, I want to capture this piece of paper, you know, I could just hold it up and then capture it, and then it'd be in my presentation or document or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of similar to I was playing around. I was using iTunes, and I got a gift card for something. And that was exactly how it worked. It was like, just show us your gift card. So I was like, okay. And I just held it up, and I went, bing, oh, yeah. Done, got it.
On the Mac, right? In iTunes?
Yeah. And it just, you know, registered it, got the numbers, and you know, applied it. And, you know, and being able to do things like that where it's just – very simple.
I saw that just recently happened, right? I think like a version or two ago. Because I saw that and I was like, oh, that's weird. Because you can just hold it up and
it was awesome. That's what it was. But I see that as an example of like what you're talking about, right? Where, okay, yeah, sure, you have that. And maybe there's, okay, I don't know if we want to go down this route, but oh, you want to buy something, here's my credit card. Boom. You know, get all the information off of it.
There's a middleware library for mobile app developers called like card.io, and it's literally scan the front of your credit card so you don't have to enter the numbers, and developers can use it, and they just hold up your credit card and it'll scan the front of it. It works a little janky. It's like you have to catch it in just the right light and make sure your numbers aren't worn off like mine, kind of thing, that have been in my wallet forever or whatever. So,
yeah, I guess that's true.
But it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I'm excited to see where this heads in the future, I guess, because I think there's still just a ton of space to play there.
Agreed.
Do you think? Here we go. Okay, we're gonna toe that line. Okay, there's a line, and we're gonna dip our toes just onto it. So you think this is anything that HP will actually be playing in and contribute to this space?
I think so. I think HP's been working on that. We put out like live photo, right, that allows you to link content to that. And HP's, I do think so. Without going into a lot of detail that would probably incriminate myself.
It's just you and me. It's just a conversation. That's it.
Yeah, we're not online.
In the internets.
So. In okay. the internets. It's me, you, and the internet.
Yeah, that's it.
No, I think this is an interesting space for HP to go from the physical to the digital and digital to the physical. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. But and that's what we've been doing, right? We do a lot of the digital to the physical, obviously, via printing. And I think, there's a ton of opportunity going the opposite direction too. More of a content management, really.
Yep.
But, I agree. And it's cool to see all these different people working on it because that, competition is good in my book. Even if it is against my company, I'm okay with that. But, again, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. Just make that very clear. Okay. Cool. Very cool.
So, James, did you see that demo of Oculus Rift where somebody built a orbital treadmill or an omni treadmill? You got to watch that video.
Omni treadmill.
Or you should figure out a way to stream it somehow in the Google On Air thing would be. Can you even do that?
All right. So it's a we can figure out how to do this. It's not impossible. Let's see.
For those listening on the podcast, will be awesome. Imagine I'll have James give his color commentary while he's doing it.
Yeah, no, it'll be. We'll just crank the volume.
Well, it's mostly the game sounds.
Oh. So there's this guy in a treadmill. He's wearing goggles. He's like holding a gun.
Yeah, I think he's wearing some like,
whoa,
or it's some like crazy mouse thing.
So he runs to move around.
Yeah so he's wearing crazy. That Oculus Rift. That's the AR virtual reality. Headset that was on Kickstarter, and then they have this. This treadmill that's like a circle with a kind of waist thing that prevents him from running off the treadmill. And then that's what moves him around, moves him forward and backward. And so he's literally running.
Oh, and it can tell when he turns too.
Well, the head on the Oculus Rift, you can tell when your head turns. So when he turns his body and his neck, it'll turn the...
Oh, okay. So it's tracking his head, not his hips necessarily.
Right.
But whatever.
But because it's so like pretty high immersion, right, he literally turns his body that way.
Yeah.
Anyways, that'd be one way to get video game nerds in shape if they have to run every time they're... they're playing their Halos or their Call of Duty.
Oh, my word. Yeah, all of a sudden all these guys are getting in shape. They're just like, oh, yeah, I put in 5 hours today. Just running around. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Supposedly the guys that built that treadmill or whatever are trying to put together a Kickstarter so they can then kickstart this treadmill controller thing. So then you can just get deeper and deeper into your augmented reality. The future is now in video games, James.
I like it. It's coming.
Running
so that's
around
why I'm
with
holding
the head
out for that moment, right?
For the full immersion.
Yeah, exactly.
They just need to add like electrodes and shock pads, so when you get hit, you literally just get, you know, 50,000 volts roll through you or something like that. Just
yeah, there you go.
Teach you a lesson. Just keep going. That's the next step. That's the next step right there.
Oh man, you know it will be too. It will get there. Now they'll probably go in another direction in terms of sensations first.
Yamahama.
Yeah. Now that's pretty sweet, and it looks like it doesn't take up too much space either.
No.
Which means you could actually have it in your living room.
I think you should do it and then hook it up to your mouse wheel. So when you're browsing the internet, you have to run to move down the page and then backpedal to go back up.
That would be trouble.
You get your workout in.
Dude, Facebook be all over that. Just a more immersive experience. Yeah, just literally hang out with your friends.
I thought that was pretty crazy. But I don't think you're gonna get the girlfriend wife vote on that thing if you're sitting in the living room with a cage around you and a big old visor and she's in there hanging out with you while you're running like a hamster on a wheel with a helmet,
just like huffing and puffing.
Yeah,
oh, I love it. Especially once they start adding, like, you know, the voice part to it, and you're just shouting out commands and telling people to go places.
I feel like that's kind of like a Steve Carell 40-year-old virgin kind of thing, where it's the guy that never got a girlfriend that has lots of money and just has that set up in his living room. Because I'm pretty sure people that are married or have girlfriends can't buy that stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. It's funny, though.
What
doesn't
that
stop me from wanting to.
I would want to try it. I was thinking it would be cool to go to like PAX or E3 or the Consumer Electronics Show or something. Try that. I don't know about buying it, but I would definitely want to jump in the middle of that and try it. So.
Yeah, that would be cool. I wonder obviously for first-person shooters, this looks like it would work really well for those. Do you think like what do you think it would take to get it to go for sports? Because that's my natural inclination, right?
I think use of like the Kinect camera and that sort of thing would be good. But the problem with sports is you actually got to impact something. I think it's the biggest problem with like the Kinect camera, that sort of thing for sports. Like when you kick a soccer ball, you're actually impacting a physical object, and kicking the wind is kind of weird, you know, or swinging a golf club, or, you know, playing like Tiger Woods on the Xbox. If you don't even, you're not swinging a golf cart club, but your hands are pretending, you don't have the weight of the club in your hand, or, you know, I don't know. I think for sports, it's a little weird because it feels like you have to have the object, you know, throwing the football or catching the baseball or hitting the baseball or, because I don't know about you, but like playing Wii Sports or whatever and or the Kinect and pretending to do the golf swing always feels weird to me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, you would need a little bit more room and you're typically doing more than, well, maybe not for golf, but for some of that stuff, you're doing more than just kicking a ball or, I don't know. There's more movement, I think, instead of just running around, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
Huh. I like it though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it's taking the next step. It'll be interesting to see how that, Kickstarter does. I mean, I think that actually could be a cool, I mean, we were just joking about it, but it could be a cool, like, nerd gym. You know, instead of a spin class, It's a 32 yes. player Team Fortress competition, 16 versus 16.
That
running
awesome.
All over the place.
Business idea born that's our next, right here yeah. on the internet.
Copyright trademarked.
That's
Furlough
it.
Bros.
When this goes on to Kickstarter, we'll just order 32 of them.
Furlough Bros have already trademarked that.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this, but anything you say on this podcast, the idea belongs to us.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
The cool thing about doing augmented reality and virtual reality is you could just have an abandoned warehouse. There's no need for window appeal and window dressing because it's all virtual reality. So you could just have a burnt out tool shed with 32 of those in there. Doesn't matter.
Yes, actually, in some ways, I think that would make it better. Actually.
Just like welcome to the Thunderdome.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you,
oh man, that would be fun.
Matthew can thank me later when you guys open up your first augmented reality treadmill Thunderdome.
Treadmill Thunderdome.
We already named it.
It has a certain ring to it.
We already named
it's
it.
Done.
Copyright trademark.
That's it. Oh, that's funny. That is cool to see that. So they haven't done the Kickstarter thing yet. They want to do that?
I don't think so. If looking at the article, I think they want to. They're fixing to. What did it say?
Yeah, because that would be interesting to see where the price lands on that bad boy too.
Well, the Oculus Rift was like $300 or $400 for just the headset.
Well, yeah, and I know that like those tread pewters, the treadmill desk computer things, those are often a couple grand just for that. And so I would imagine it's probably somewhere in that neighborhood, be my guess.
Trying to look up on their website what the word on the street is. Victorix is currently prepping a Kickstarter campaign to launch the Omni. The Omni is the first Omni treadmill that is affordable to all household consumers, fits in a living room, and above all, it allows the user to walk freely in naturally virtual environments. They have pictures of them playing Skyrim and Crysis. I'm going to have to go look at these later. This is amusing.
That's sweet. That's very cool.
All right, what do you got next, Big Cat?
So there was another one that was actually very similar to this, though I will admit not quite as Leap Motion announced that they have their first partner.
Second partner.
I'm sorry. Well, okay. It's their first built-in gesture-controlled computers.
That's right.
It is going to be with HP.
With one Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Maybe you have.
Yeah, maybe you have.
They also make PCs, in case you missed that. But yeah, so their official release date is May 13th, which is coming up, actually.
But I guess they're starting off with just packing them in, and then they're going to build them in later, which kind of sucks. I feel like the HP should have came out immediately with the Leap Motion built in, because I think that technology is pretty interesting. I'm sure you guys have talked about it a couple times on this show with doing finger tracking. But the little dongle that it has in front, I think it's going to be hard for people to get used to and use. And so until it's built into the actual device.
Right.
Which is awesome that HP is the first partner that's doing that. So that's pretty neat. Because I think Asus is also selling
this. That,
go ahead.
Yeah, because what I like about it is if HP does it, that means that there will eventually be millions of computers out there with them. On there, which means it'll actually be, generally used. It won't just be this side peripheral that a few thousand people have. They do these niche little things. This will, developers will be like, oh, this is actually kind of a big deal. There's enough of an install base where it makes sense to develop actual apps for this.
Right.
Which would be cool.
Yeah, and
I'd take one.
Are they the Leap Motion is out yet or not out yet?
No, it's May 13th.
Yeah, they must have got delayed because I thought they were coming out this last fall, but then they must have got delayed somehow. Yeah, if you go to their website, still under the pre-order. We'll start shipping on May 13th.
They did ship 12,000 test units earlier, but that was about it. Kind of like Google's doing their, oh, we released Glass, but not really. So it's okay.
Secret release.
Yeah.
Would you use Leap?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's novelty?
Well, I guess it depends on what it would be for, but I would love to be able to do some of that. I guess it depends on what it would be for, but I like the idea of it. But again, it's like, what's a great use case for that? Could you be surfing the web with it where you're like flicking your fingers? Oh yeah. Go up the page, go down. I could see like if you were doing like a YouTube thing and you didn't want to, you're like, oh, I could just point. But again, I don't know. I would be sitting back. Maybe that's too far away. Maybe that's a bad example.
The hard part about input devices on the computer is it almost requires new development and user interaction and design because you can't even hardly conceive of how you would use it until people develop software for it and software that's not bolted in.
Right.
Because, I do think, doing the whole kind of almost, Minority Report manipulation of stuff, you could video editing, you could go, expand this thing out and collapse this in, pick that frame up, move it over here, but you'd have to design the whole software to kind of work that way. And then the other thing that we were just talking about with, the Kinect, they show some examples of people, drawing, but again, I think it's drawing like this vertically and not impacting paper is weird. You know what I mean? I don't know people that kind of –
teachers do it on a whiteboard, so they might be good at it.
Well, but you're impacting the board then. This is literally just drawing in – the air, and I don't know, seems but also you don't really get that feedback loop that's really, that's what the Leap thing gives you, is if you're drawing and you can see that very minute, very accurate feedback, then maybe it's all right, because then it doesn't matter impacting, but whereas other instantiations of this technology in the past were so gross movements, that you do this and you get this huge blotch across the screen. Yeah. So,
right.
I don't know. It's interesting, but I do think,
go ahead.
You're manipulating 3D objects and somebody that's a 3D modeler, that sort of thing that they're working in 3D and they're like, let me rotate this and then I'm going to get back on my keyboard and then work and then I'm going to, move this object around or spit, if you're using it in concert with the keyboard and mouse, but using it to manipulate the object on the screen, I don't know. I think it's really going to have to – that's the exciting thing about HP building it into the device, like you said, is once you have a large enough installed base that has this thing, then people start designing software to use it. And then
– Right.
then it becomes much more interesting.
Yeah, and I think the first obvious one you'll see is basically a replication of, you know, as if it were a touch screen. You know, like you'll be able to do a lot of that, like the Windows 8 flowing of the tiles and stuff. That will just work, and you'll see more things like that. You know, where I was thinking, like with, yeah, kind of, I like your movie editing example, right? Where you could probably do with your touchscreen, go in and kind of pinch the zoom and things that you would normally do on a, you would just put your fingers to the touchscreen, which does give you that feedback, but instead of just do it in the air. But then there's that next level where you're like, okay, we're not stuck with just 2D movements anymore. We could actually do 3D rotating, grabbing, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I think that would be cool.
Right.
When it gets there. Someday.
Someday.
Huh. But yeah, I liked it. That was a good old leap of motion.
Yeah, I think it's cool that I was happy to see that HP was doing that. I think that's cool. So time will tell to see how well it was and how well HP implements it, right? If it's on like 2 or 3 boutique laptops, you know, then that's not as good as putting it on everything. So
I don't know. Maybe they'll start with that and just kind of see what the demand looks like, and then it'll probably cascade down.
I was kind of surprised that they didn't get bought by like Apple or Google or somebody.
Yeah, they must not want to be bought, then would be my guess.
Yeah.
I feel like someone probably did make, you know, ovations. Hey, how's that business over there?
Yeah. Because it got quite a bit of press just when they showed it off, just when they unveiled it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, true. Very true. I'm going to switch gears here for half a second to movies, okay? And I got a couple of them, I guess. First question, have you seen the new I, Steve movie yet?
No, but I want to. Have you?
I have, actually. I have.
To its completion, you watched the whole thing.
I watched the whole 80-minute thing.
Give me your review.
Yeah, so their whole thing was, which I liked. They were like, "This may not be the best Steve Jobs movie, but it will be the first." And though I think the way that I would describe it is, it's a cheeky fan movie made. Or I should say it's a cheeky movie for fans made by fans. Okay? So in the sense that like from a – like how close did they get to being accurate? Like 0. I think they got the names right. I think it was as close as they got in their accuracy. but then what they did was so the storyline was totally wrong. You know, and because it starts off with like he's got the hots for like Melinda Gates, and you know, and so he's trying to like impress her over time. You know, you're like, okay, whatever, totally wrong. And so the things like that. And Steve Wozniak is totally like this person who everybody hates. They're just like, Wozniak, you're dumb. Get out of here. You're not cool. We don't want you to be around. And they just make fun of him the entire time. Oh, it's unbelievable. Which is kind of funny. Just how like blatantly wrong. They're not even trying to be right. But what they do is they reference a whole bunch of things within the wrong storyline. Like, for example, they're at this one, it's at a launch party of the Mac, and of the Mac, and which is like also his birthday party, which is like, okay, it's not right, but that's okay. And Steve and Melinda Gates, or no, Bill and Melinda Gates are there, and he's talking about, oh wow, it's so great to see how you know, awesome you are. And for his birthday, Melinda Gates gives him this black mock turtleneck shirt. She goes, oh, I thought you just looked good in it. And you know, so I just wanted to give this to you as a birthday present. He was like, oh, wow, thank you so much. You know, and then you see him at the end where he's wearing it, but, you know, that was just kind of this like, ah, that's why he wears that thing. You know, those weird parts. So the guy who plays Steve Jobs is Justin Long, who was the dude who did all of the he was the Mac in the PC versus right. Mac commercials. And so they have this whole montage where they find this Justin Long character who's someone else in the movie to do the commercials, and then to do this whole thing where he's just like, he's yelling at him and he's making fun of him for being a horrible actor and, you know, just like getting after him like, all right, that's pretty funny. Just being goofy. And, you know, so just weird stuff like that.
Didn't they write it in like 2 days and then film it in 5 days or something like that?
I think so. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And it comes off that way. There's really only like 4 or 5 background type things. and that's it. Yeah. No, it's definitely low budget for sure. But yeah, no, it's funny. At one point in time, they insinuate that Steve Jobs is actually a robot and who thinks he's a human. Which is just kind of, cause he's like, he's telling a story and all of a sudden he like breaks down and this scientist comes up and like fixes some component and then puts it back into him. And you hear the Apple startup thing and he pops back up, like back into a sentence and just kind of keeps going. He's like, no explanation there. Just kind of, all right, let it go. Which is funny. They talk about too, like he goes to India, which actually, you know, he's like in India and he's searching enlightenment. And so he finds this person. And he's like, hey, I have heard that you are the guru of the gurus and that you can give enlightenment. And he's like, oh, well, tell me about yourself. And he's like, well, you know, I'm kind of interested in computers, which like hadn't been invented at the time. But he's describing these computers like, oh, yeah, where you do these calculations and stuff like that. And the dude's like, I don't understand anything you just said. He goes, if you could figure out a way to make this more simpler so I could understand it, maybe that would be cool. He's like, yeah, okay, sure. I'll think about it, I guess. And so he goes on. and he says a couple other things like, you just need to learn to relax so that you can think differently about things and about life. And that's what you need to do. And so, they come off as like, every idea that he had came from somebody else, but then he just takes it as his own and, you know, just kind of runs with it, which, it was funny. Just like, just a goofy.
So it was
I'm glad it wasn't like 2 hours,
because
then I really would have felt like it. I was going to say, I'm glad it wasn't 2 hours, because then I really would have felt like I wasted my time. You know, but for 80 minutes, sure, you know, why not? Especially if you read the Steve Jobs biography, you get all the little minor references.
So I think it's interesting that Funny or Die is doing those like almost like full length movie. I wonder if they'll keep doing this, or because most of them are really short YouTube like clips, you know, that they do, and they decide because they made a big deal out of them making a full movie about Steve Jobs, even though that sounds like it's a. They didn't spend a lot of time on the historical information or purposely avoided it.
I would agree with that. Yeah, it was weird. But I don't know. I don't know how they're planning on making money on it either. I guess they have ads on their site. Is that, or they're just like that you like
I
that
think
one
so.
So you go visit other videos?
I think it's all ad revenue.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. But yeah, it's funny. They're just like, really. Yeah, it's like this photo here that they have. It's a picture of Steve Jobs having an apple, and then Steve Wozniak holding an apple. And they're both like, they're holding an apple, just kind of giving them the smile. But in the movie, they're actually doing that pose together. And they're there with the photographer, and she's taking it, and she's like, this just isn't... There's something that's not working about this. Let me think. Wozniak, can you scoot over just a little bit? And so he scoots over. She goes, yeah, that's better. Can you scoot over a little bit more now? It's like, yeah, I guess. She goes, okay, great. Now, just take like 4 or 5 really big steps over to the side. And he goes, yeah, I'm, you think I'll still be in the picture? He goes, no, I don't think you will. And I think it'll be better that way. It's like, oh, okay. He's like, I'll just sit down over here. She's like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I think we're done with you. He's like, well, why did I put on this nice suit? She goes, I don't know. And so he's sitting there like on this chair. And then so he starts eating his apple because, you know, he's like not doing anything. And that's where Steve Jobs is like, he goes, hey, Waz, can you just like go wait in the car? You're really messing with the aura in the room right now. This isn't working for me. And so he leaves like, yeah, that's much better. Yeah. All right, here we go. Let's take a photo. And you're just like, so there's the entire time. They're just bashing on him over and over. It's pretty funny, but that's okay. You know,
I'll have to check it out. I've been meaning to check it out, but I hadn't dove in yet.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. You know, Funny or Die, right? That's what you would expect for them to just create a totally goofy, over the top. It's completely wrong movie of it, and I think in some ways too, they're making fun of the Sorkin video that's coming out, and of the Ashton Kutcher one. You know, it's just more of they're gonna try to do these biography movies of just a section. Like, no, we're gonna make fun of you for attempting to do it, but yeah, it's funny. It's pretty goofy.
I'll have to check it out. I've been meaning to.
All right, you should. It's cool. So also in movie news, Netflix had an announcement this week where apparently Microsoft has decided that they're going to kill off Silverlight in like 10 years or some ridiculously, you know how long it takes them to kill something. But Netflix isn't waiting around because if you've ever used Netflix, which I fully expect everyone who listens to this to have used it, they use Silverlight in the browser to control it. And so as a result, they're moving away from it. And so what they've been doing is they've been working with the W3C dudes who, you know, sit around in a room and pontificate to try to come up with an HTML5 video alternative. And so it sounds like they've actually figured that out, and what they have created are like 3 different components to it, which I thought was funny. Like, one of them is actually the ability for them to play high quality video, where they're like, it allows us to use JavaScript to detect your speed and detect how the movie's doing, and so we can do their whole like dynamic, make the movie look good or make it look horrible thing. You know, which you've seen, like, right? Normally the movies, they start off kind of fuzzy and you're like, are my glasses broken? And then, you know, and then they get clear as more of it loads. So they said they figured out a way how to do that using HTML, which is nice. And then what they've also figured out are like 2 other ones, which are all for DRM type stuff. So the first one is to, like I said, to be able to lock it down, somehow magically, so you and I can't get to the file. They encrypt it somehow. It's magic as far as I know.
Cryptography.
But they've done. Yeah, and then that's the second one, which is really more for like, they were saying that it allows them to encrypt and decrypt communication between Netflix and their servers. So it allows them to protect the user data, essentially. So like one of them is for the video data and then for you and I. They're protecting us. It's so nice of them.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, exactly. So and they've actually been beta testing it kind of already in the Google Chromebooks, since those are only browsers and they don't accept whatever that thing's called, Silverlight. And so they're like, yeah, we've been using it. We've been playing around with it, and they've got the specs and stuff. And so the future video, HTML5, it's coming.
I think that'll be good, though, because then it'll be easier to port. It'll probably be good engineering-wise for Netflix, so they can be in multiple applications without having to figure out how to transcode their videos into various formats and all this. This is probably actually a good thing for Netflix's engineering group, so they don't have to figure out how to develop it on Android versus iOS versus Windows versus Linux versus, you know, whatever. They can just do it in HTML5 and it'd be highly portable.
Yeah, so. I don't remember. There was some stat I read a really long time ago, like how many times they had the transcode things. And I mean, it was like ridiculous, like 50 times. You're just like, what? Yeah, for all the different devices and stuff. So yeah, I agree with you. That'll free up a lot of their bandwidth, which would be nice.
Then they can work
spend
on,
it on
their,
more of that premium content.
Or work on their user interface on their instant watch queue. I'm still surprised that you can't do anything to edit your queue very smartly. It's just put it in there, first in, first out. That's all we can do for you. Sorry. No sorting.
You can change the numbers manually.
No folders.
Or send the top.
Ugh. So maybe if they can crack this engineering puzzle, they can get into some basics of user design and interaction.
So how big is your queue?
Oh, it's probably like 300-ish.
Oh my gosh. Really?
That's why I'm probably complaining more than most. Here, I'll pull it
wow.
up.
Wow.
My instant queue is 159, actually, so it's not that bad.
Oh, okay. Well,
so it's
sure.
a very manageable 159.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That would be an interesting statistic to know, like how big, you know, what's the average queue size and then what's the distribution of that. That would be fascinating to see.
I think yeah. I think a lot of people use the queue that just to bookmark things. That's what I do. I don't really – it's not like the ones that I'm going to watch, but it's like, oh, that looks interesting, and if I'm in the mood to watch it, I'd watch it kind of thing. So I have a bunch of like TV shows and stuff that, you know, I'm not going to sit there and just go episode one through the end and then be done and delete it kind of thing. It's just on there. So
yeah, because you do most of the digital streaming, right? Do you still get the physical DVDs?
Nope, all digital. So
yeah, then I guess it really doesn't matter per se.
Except for it's a pain in the butt to find stuff. I would like it to be sorted better. I mean, you could sort by genre, you could sort by alphabetical, you could sort by year, you know, whatever. You could like reorder your queue. Folders. Oh, what shocker. Two TV
or
shows.
Or you just do something where like you can give some sort of rating system. Not like the movie rating, but I'm really interested in watching this, or this is
the priority order or something like that.
Yeah. Or like be able to say like I don't know. I would like be able to add like tags to it, right? Oh, this is a great kids stuff. So when the kids are watching, they can filter out, all of your guys' movies because they don't care. You know,
I've always wanted that. I've always thought it'd be cool if you could on Netflix like build a channel. Like I want to watch The Wonder Years. I want to watch Frasier. And I want to watch a Star Trek movie, and then I want to watch, a 30 for 30. And then just put it, like, just start my channel, and so it'd play, like, random, or, like, sequential but random episodes of stuff. So it's like, okay, I watched three episodes of this, then I'm flipping over to that, and then I watched another two episodes of this, and I'm flipping over to that, like a cable TV show, you know, like... We have a 3-hour block of Frasier and then moving into the Star Trek movie and then moving over to this show. I think that'd
finish
be kind of cool.
Finish off the night with a romantic comedy. Yeah.
Just a delicious romantic comedy. So
yeah,
I think that'd be kind of cool. Because there's a bunch of like TV shows that I like on there, but I don't want to just necessarily watch all of them back to back. So it'd be kind of cool if I could just kind of like a playlist instead of a folder. Oh, imagine that. Weird.
Oh, interesting idea.
Shuffle playlist. Shocker.
It's a good idea. You hear that, Netflix?
Yeah, free advice. Man, we're businesses, free advice. This is turning into a consulting podcast.
This is normal for us, man. We are a high-value show. You'll come away with at least $1 billion idea.
At least one.
Maybe.
If not a couple.
Yeah, exactly.
We guarantee. Per hour. We guarantee one.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, you know, it is a free podcast, so we gotta.
Well, we're not telling you how to do it. We're just, you know, helping you out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I saw your article about the Windows 8. I thought that was interesting, since Windows 8 was all about kind of Cortez burn the ships, no more start button, no more desktop. We're just gonna do this Windows 8 thing, and with their with Windows Blue, they're like, well, maybe we'll make it so you could boot to the desktop and put a start button back on there.
Yeah. Well, and from what I understand, the start button's actually there, right? If you like go down in the corner and right click, it pops up just like normal.
Yeah, but it brings you back to the tiles.
Oh, okay.
It's not a Windows Explorer view, whatever.
Pop up thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I saw some tweet recently that was like, what's the most popular Windows 8 tile? And there was about 50 comments back that said the desktop. Like, what's your favorite Windows 8 app tile? Desktop, 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 desktop. Wah, wah, wah.
Oh, classic.
I think that's, though, back to kind of what we were talking about, the leap motion. I think Windows 8 is interesting, but it's, you have to design the software and the user interaction for that, and everything is still in the old paradigm, which is somewhat affecting, you know, for example, iOS. Like, everybody's clamoring for Apple to change iOS significantly. But it's going to be super hard for them to do that, because anything they change, they're going to change the whole software ecosystem to ask for something new and different. And it's going to and actually, that's, I think, part of the problem that Apple's facing, that Windows faced back in the day and still faces, right? Like, we made Windows software, it behaves and acts a certain way. People come to expect it. Software development comes to expect it that way, and then you change it, and nobody likes it. And then, you know, akin to iOS, everybody thinks that they're old and stale compared to Android, and Android's out-innovating them. But that's because they have way more applications and way more kind of baggage to deal with. And if they change iOS in a fundamental, crazy way, then all these apps get jacked up and developers get pissed. And so it's kind of interesting.
And it's not fun. You know, and now they have an example that they can point at, right? Where Microsoft said, oh yeah, we will do that. And it's not working out for them at all.
Yeah.
But
I think the other thing on Windows 8, I think Windows 8 tablets and convertibles are pretty interesting. But again, it's changing the hardware and the software. Those have to change harmoniously and work harmoniously. And so, like, Windows 8 and the operating system and the, like, Surface RT are very cool. But then at the end of the day, you still got to use Windows. You know, kind of like, you're still they didn't make the full leap, right? Like, it's almost Windows 8 might have been more successful if they just said, hey, we have this new operating system from Microsoft, and it's the tablet, and it's called, you know, Doors instead of Windows, or, you know, like, it's something totally different, and it's
curtains.
Different software. Curtains, yeah. It's window, vinyl clings, window, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Roman shades. Blinds.
Doors. That would be funny.
But that's what they needed, man, because then otherwise, then you're like, I made Photoshop for Doors, and I made Office for Doors, and, you know, whatever, and it works via finger input, not via mouse and keyboard.
So what you're saying is they should have instead of taking their standard desktop operating system, they should have created a separate operating system that complements it, really.
Yeah.
Basically following the Apple model, essentially.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, but I think Apple's got the same problem that Windows had back, 10 years ago or 10 years ago where they were like, okay, maybe we should make Windows 8. Because people feel like they're not being innovative, and Apple's getting the same complaint levied against them on iOS, and they're not. It's going to be super hard to change iOS to be anything. The problem with software development, and specifically operating systems on that, is once you get a groundswell of usage and ecosystem, you have to be evolutionary instead of revolutionary. You can't.
Right.
You can't just be like, bam, here's the new awesome. Because if you change everything, then people freak out.
Yeah, or you can do like Google, where they have been making a lot of big changes. And like they've got like less – I think they just crossed the 10% mark for their latest operating system in terms of user adoption. And so you run into that kind of problem where, people aren't going to upgrade and they're not going to change and they're not going to – obviously, Apple could because they do the hardware software piece, but they run into this problem where it's like Samsung and HTC and other companies are like, no, we're not going to update our current phones to run this new one. We're just not going to make it happen. And furthermore, we've been developing this other phone for 3 years, so we're not going to update it for the latest operating system either. Right. So you run into this weird situation where, 5 years from now, Jelly Bean will be awesome because it'll be all over the place. So it's kind of, that's a tough one where, Apple gets to boast of super high user adoption and they get everybody on the same page. But is that page as cool as it could be? It's like, probably not.
Right.
Which is a bummer.
Totally.
But I say bring back the start button. I love that
thing. I do too. I burnt the ship and installed Windows 8 on our home machine, and it's all right.
It's okay. Do you think if you had like the Leap, so you could do more touch type of inputs, that it would be better?
No. Oh. I think Windows 8's not made for the desktop, and it's not made for a workstation. It's like an iPad, right? It's like an iPad that somebody needs to use Office every now and again. I want to browse and look at the internet, but every now and again, I want to hook up a keyboard to this thing and actually do some work. And I'm not doing enough hardcore work to require like a workstation where I need a dedicated big screen, mouse, and desktop, but I'm maybe doing my house like finances, or I need to type a letter to somebody, or I need to type, this kind of thing. It's not like the professional, like I'm running SPSS statistical modeling software, or I'm running Final Cut Pro, and I'm actually editing a movie together, or doing Photoshop or Illustrator or that sort of thing.
So that's interesting because I actually was talking to a friend last night, and he just did this. So I haven't gotten the part yet where this is actually work. But he said that he had just bought a Surface Pro. And the way that he uses it is actually like the exact opposite of what you just said, where he has the three monitors set up with a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. And he goes, and all he does is he takes the Surface Pro and just plugs in the USB, which then powers, sends it to the monitors and then the power for the Surface Pro. And he goes, and he sits back and he does his heavy duty lifting, the big time work type stuff. And then he loves it because when it's time to go, you just unplug the two plugs, pick it up, put it in your bag, your MERS, and then he heads off to his meetings. And I know he does more like he's a project manager type thing. So I think he does do a lot of running around and, you know, meeting with people and checking in and seeing how they're doing.
And, but notice, notice he was doing the real work on the big keyboard with the Bluetooth.
Yes.
The big monitors and the Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. He wasn't.
Right.
So, like, I actually think, and it hasn't come to fruition, but I was super excited about the idea of the Thunderbolt connection that Thunderbolt? Lightning?
Oh,
Lightning or Thunderbolt? I'm confused now. Is it Thunderbolt?
It's Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt.
But there was the idea of Thunderbolt can be much more powerful than just a monitor, which is mostly what Apple's using it for. They use it. They have a couple like external drives, but back when that technology first came out, people were talking about that you could basically have a like MacBook Air type laptop that docks in via Thunderbolt connection to basically a then like iMac or MacBook Pro configuration, because you could have a dedicated video card and more RAM and a bigger hard drive and like basically like a, you know, like way back in the day, you could have like the 8086 processor with the math coprocessor doing all this other stuff. So yeah, like this idea would be like, I have a basic computer that does basic functions, but then when I connect it up with the Thunderbolt, when I belt up to the thunder, when I connect up the Thunderbolt connection, I can't even talk now, that you would augment that computer to be like more awesome. And that really hasn't came out yet, but I think that could be – that's really exciting to me of like I have a laptop that basically gets the job done, you know, mm-hmm. on a on-the-go type of thing. But then when I need to do some heavy lifting, I can dock into this thing and kind of – put my computer into turbo mode, bigger, beefier graphics card, better RAM, more hard drive space, maybe yeah. even faster CPU or augmenting the CPU. That could be cool.
That'd be very cool. I'd be into that.
Yeah.
I could do that. That'd be nice. That would be nice. So. Cool. So what else? You got anything else?
I think the Google Glass stuff's still kind of interesting, especially the way that
Did you get yours?
No, I did not get – I tried to get in that program. Did you try to get in that program? I don't know if I ever saw your tweet.
No, I didn't. What? You did not. I was in the middle of buying something else really expensive, and so I didn't go for it.
Well, you still had to be selected to win the chance to fly down to Palo Alto or New York City and then open up your wallet and shell out $1,500 to then get the device. And like, I'm actually wondering how people on that actually understand. Like, just applying on this and sending out a tweet. Like, and then they're like, yeah, you got picked to get Google Glass. So next time you fly down to L.A. or New York and give us $2,000 or $1,500, you can go home with one. I'm wondering how many of those people are going to be like, say what? You're not just going to mail me one of them for freeze?
No. Yeah, that's what you did with the Chromebooks. I don't understand.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how many people. But I saw a couple unboxing videos. It's kind of interesting. Evidently, it doesn't play nice with iOS right now, which is not a shocker. We've seen multiple stories about how Apple works awesome with third-party hardware, a la Pebble and Google and all that. You know, They don't necessarily play nice with extra peripherals. So,
yeah. Well, and I mean, in all honesty, if I were Google, I would not try very hard to make it compatible with an iPhone.
I think you'd make the basic functionality and call it good. check that checkbox and then say if you want to really Google it up, go ahead and buy yourself an Android.
Exactly. I mean, that's what you would expect from Apple, right? They would be like, you wanted it to work with Android?
They probably wouldn't even put the app out, whereas Google's probably at least going to put out an app that does what they can to make it happen. But you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. Apple would just be like, yeah, buy an Apple thing. So,
yeah. Do you see the fruit logo? That should tell you. It only works with other fruit logos.
It'll be interesting, though, to see how that works over the summer. I think it's almost like what I think is interesting, like technology, is like almost the blurring of lines between a beta test and a product release, like both in software and hardware, is like that Google Glass Explorers is essentially a beta test and is essentially market mm-hmm. research for Google, but they successfully have hyped and spun it up into where these beta testers are buying $2,000 piece of hardware and testing it for Google and paying for the privilege, which is bravo on Google. Kudos to you on that. But
pretty brilliant marketing.
Well, but what could backfire on that is if it's kind of crappy and buggy, it'll be interesting to see how many people put up with that or don't put up with that, and what some of the claims are. And I don't know if you noticed, there's some article about, like, as soon as they got it, some dude threw it up on eBay and it was like almost up to like $30,000 or something ridiculous. Oh. Now, we'll see if somebody actually – I doubt that person would have actually paid that amount of money for it, but Google made him pull it down. So it's like you can't even resell your Google Glass Explorer Edition.
At least not that way.
At least not in the very public on the internet's way. You probably sell it on the street corner. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Man, that's interesting. I don't know. I'm sure you saw the what was that guy's name? Topolowski, his review of it. And he was like, this thing's awesome. And he's like, there's some quirks, but he's like, I would totally wear this. I mean, now don't get me wrong, like, he's obviously biased towards cool stuff like this. But
would you buy it?
I don't know.
Would you wear it?
There's an answer here. Unfortunately, I am I tend to be cheap. Sometimes I say frugal because it sounds better, but I'm cheap, and so price will probably influence my decision significantly. But I'm interested. If the price was right, and I don't have an answer for what that is, I'd be all over it, and I would wear it all the time. I think it's cool.
I think it's interesting. I think I was just reading an article before we started podcasting about how this is actually affecting various real life things. And they, as soon as Google Glass went out, some reporter went out and talked to, like, basically, like, casinos are saying, like, no, you can't come into the casino with Google Glass. Like, strip clubs are like, no, you can't come in here and start filming up all our ladies. Like, movie theaters are like, no, you can't come in here and be filming movies, you know, like, you can't bring in recording devices into movies and that sort of thing.
Not so in our office.
Right. It'll be interesting to see how that works and if people will – there'll be like a backlash to people. Because what's interesting and kind of goofy about that is that almost everybody has a recording device in their pocket now.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just like very – you wouldn't even know, like, maybe I was recording you right now with my glasses and you wouldn't even know. There's no like red camcorder light on that says I'm recording, you know, right, or that sort of thing. So
what do you think it'll get to a point where, you know, if they were smart, they would create all sorts of different versions and looks and flavors of it so that, you know, it's not easily identifiable. And then at that point in time, you just got to throw your hands in the air. Go, yeah.
Well, I think that's
technically,
what
people you can't, but we can't stop you either.
I think that's what people did with cell phones, and I think they'll eventually do it with this kind of technology. Is I think you're exactly right that they'll just be like built into my prescription eyeglass frames, and you won't even hardly know. And it'll get smaller and smaller, so like the recording device will just be right here on the frame part, and you don't even see that I'm wearing them, you know, kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I did think I was watching this unboxing video. They have like these clip-on like sunglasses that look kind of like sport Oakley ones and looks kind of goofy. And then they had like clear, and the guy was like, "In case you're
safety
like
goggles."
Yeah, basically, like if I'm like freaking welding, I guess, or that welding's probably a bad example. You're not gonna weld with just straight glasses, but. But, you know, maybe I'm buffing out something or something, you know, I don't know. I was like, "What?" Yeah, weed I'm like, whacking. Why? Well, yeah, weed whacking. I'm gonna live stream my yard maintenance for the world.
Maybe you're doing a construction project and you're following a how-to video. And I, okay, I cut here. Yeah. Keeping up.
That's gonna be the extension of the Furlough Bros podcast once the Google Glasses get procured is a series of how-to videos from yard maintenance to building your own porch.
First person perspective, it'll be great.
First person hammer coming down up and then down up and then down. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, I'll show you how to sand using an orbital sander. It'll be fantastic.
It'll be great.
Give you the proper safety tips so you don't try to cut off your finger.
Riveting television.
Yeah, totally.
Can't hear me over this sander, but what I'm doing is fanning into the green, not against the green, with the grain. Now watch as I move this in a circular. Ah, my hand! Now watch as I go to the hospital. Evidently, I cannot record.
It's like inside the doctor's office. Yeah.
Can't record in here because of health insurance liability claims.
Yeah, which is funny. I actually did record most of what happened in the doctor's office when I was getting stitched up, had Jesse doing it. I wasn't doing it. And the next time I saw my doctor, he was like, "Hey, P.S. You probably shouldn't share any of that video stuff." He's like, just for the record. And, you know, but it was in the moment. He didn't say anything. And he didn't even think about it until afterwards. He was like, "Oh, shoot, that could actually be pretty bad if it ends up on YouTube." And, you know, and so, which I was like, I get. And so I think you'll have a bunch of those weird, like, circumstances.
Yeah. Well, that you were referencing that Verge article from Josh Topolowski. Like, he walked into the Starbucks or whatever. And the whole film crew was filming him, and they said, "You have to shut off all those cameras. You can't have the cameras on." And he left his Google Glasses on, and they never asked him about that. And he recorded the whole time. And he said what will be interesting is because he said the girl didn't know quite what to make of the glasses and him wearing the glasses and what the heck that was all about. But as they get a little more prevalent, you know, then it's like, hey, take off your – but for me, it'd be like if I had prescription lenses built in, you know, take off your glasses. Well, I can't see if I take off my glasses.
Yeah. So. No, there's going to be a lot of really weird, like, yeah, it has big social implications behind it.
It does.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Bring it on. I'm okay with that.
Stir the pot.
My wife said, like, if I ever buy it, I'm not allowed to wear it while talking to her. She's like, just not allowed.
Live streaming your life. That
could
be also an extension of the Furlough Bros podcast, just live streaming James's events the whole time. Here's me on the toilet pooping. I'm just talking
Justin
it out to my audience.
Cool. Here's the articles I'm reading on my iPhone for the podcast while taking care of business. So, inside baseball for you.
Yeah, classy.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, it'll be, I don't know. I would totally. How about you? If, you know, let's say assume Price is Right. I guess obviously you tried to get it, so you're interested.
I think so. I think I would be interested again if the Price is Right, or if maybe my company would buy them for me. That'd be awesome.
That would be nice.
I don't know if I'd wear them all the time though. Because I was thinking about, like, would I get, like, prescription lenses and, like, literally wear them as my glasses. Mm. But I don't – I also think
– Switch over to contacts, man.
But then what the hell is the point there? I switch to contacts so I can wear some on my face again?
I don't know.
No, I think right now with the way that it – the technology is, and I know it's like first evolution of that, but mm-hmm. I feel like you've kind of got the I'm wearing my Bluetooth headset douchebag kind of look, you know, like I'm walking around brokering deals in the Costco hot dog line, you know,
yeah.
Like, so if I was wearing that all the time, would I look like just the biggest D-bag all the time, you know, just like, you know, I'm just recording life, taking pictures, doing stuff, you know, like,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about update. It. What'd you say? Hold on, you know.
Ooh, an alert.
Yeah. And I'm probably annoying enough as it is with my phone, so I could only imagine my glasses. I'm like, What'd you say, James? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Good talk. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I'm always just constantly looking off into the upper right, just like, yeah.
Like, uh-huh. Don't roll your eyes. Oh, you're yeah. not. You're not even paying attention anymore.
Totally off in La La Land. So, yeah, I don't know if I'd want to wear them all the time, which would be.
So then what would you wear them for? Like watching your kids do sporting events, you'd wear it for that so you could record it type stuff? Or
I guess. I don't know. I think it would be interesting to. I think wearable technology is really interesting. It's just how do you like Pebble and smartwatches and how does that help your life, you know, and enhance versus distract? And so mm-hmm. like I think if you had those glasses and it could, you know, I actually think driving in the car and getting like notifications in the car and seeing things could be interesting because then I'm still looking, driving, and not, you know, on the phone kind of thing, or when you're
yeah,
walking
well, I
around.
Was, well, yeah, like the example that I heard, which, you know, I was like, okay, I can buy into that, was the idea of you see the world around you again. You know, because now so much of us, we have our heads down, we're looking at our phones, doing whatever we're doing. Now you would have your head back up again because you wouldn't have to look down. You could actually look at people's face. You could look at the world around you. If you went on vacation, you wouldn't be messing with your phone trying to take a picture or take a video. You would just be enjoying the scenery and, you know, tap a button, take a picture, boom. Now I've captured the moment and in more ways than one. Yeah, I've got it for the long term, and I have captured it fully for what it is right now.
Right.
You know, I see that as a good, you know, I think that's a great enhancement of your life. It, in some ways, it allows the technology to get out of the way, to not be as much in between you and the experience of whatever's going on. I think, you know, it's funny, they talk about how, you know, it's, on a smartphone or even a tablet, it's hard to do, quote, like real work. you know, kind of like what you were talking about, like doing Excel type stuff, you know, anything heavy lifting, Photoshop related, like it just doesn't work on a tablet or your smartphone very well at all. And so it tends to be more, you know, consumption based type of activities and, you know, and those types of things. And so now you come back a step and you go, okay, now you can do even less of that. What does this enable you to do? Is it really, like I think about like the Pebble, it's all about notifications, right? That's,
yep.
You're not supposed to read your emails or your text messages other than to go, ooh, I got one and here's a snippet of what it is. And then if I really want to consume it, that's when you pull out your phone and you do it. And then if I really wanted to, you know, I don't know, you know, type a long response to whatever someone did, right? You get a request to do something. Oh, I saw I got the request. You read the request on your phone, you go back to your laptop and you actually fulfill whatever that project was that you got asked to do. You know, so I think they're all fulfilling different levels. And technically, yeah, you could do it all on your desktop. And you know, and it would all work. And you can, and you do technically get all your notifications on your phone. But if you're like me, your pocket's buzzing half the time, and you're like, okay, I just gotta look real quick. Or, you know,
do you have do you have an ETA on your Pebble? Because you picked white, right? So it's like the last one.
Oh my gosh, I know. I did it because I wanted to be cool, and yeah. So I got their latest update, and they were saying like they have done all the black. And they're done with that. And they were like, and we actually have some extra in stock. So they gave me the option to switch over to black. And if I did, they would ship it within a week or two.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I did not do that.
Whoa, hold firm.
Toe the line. I was like, I want my white. And I think I do because they said the next one is going to move on to. Well, because.
You're cracking under the pressure.
Because they said that the reason why it's taking long for the colors is they were having problems getting the colors just right, particularly trying to get the white just right. So that's actually going to be the very last one that they do.
That's what I thought I heard.
And so I was like, oh, I would hate to wait this long and then get it and be like, this is not white. This is like off yellow or, you know, something like that. And so
Semi-side benefit to your wait until it's the last one is I bet you their software will evolve once or twice more. Like it already moved to like 2.0 software and you might be at 2.2 or 2.5 by the time you – so all the kinks of having it at the beginning, you know.
Yeah, and I think they'll figure out some manufacturing lessons along the way. And so I think the hardware will be – slightly better, just, you know, I hope
more robust.
They could get, but I mean, they're still talking like 6 to 8 weeks before they even produce them, so it's gonna be like a whole year by the time I get it. But
that sucks.
Which my current watch finally broke, and so
you're holding strong and trying to wait.
It's like, I'm gonna wait it out, though. I did, congratulations to me. Dun-da-da-da. I've been with HP for 5 years, and so I got to pick a prize for a service award with them.
You did?
I did. It's part of their new.
I didn't get a service award.
What?
Oh, what? Hold on. Just what? What did this say? When I root.
Ooh, are they
when
up?
I root. All right.
There it is.
Service reward.
I like it. Yeah. So I got a service award, and I will admit that I did actually choose, because it had like 6 options. It was like 4 different watches, some jewelry, a pen, and then like
I'm pissed. I didn't get a service reward. I got a piece of paper.
I got that too.
I got like an email, I think. Hey, congrats on your 5 years.
Yeah, that was what I printed off, that thing, and then I printed off my picture with me and Meg Whitman together. That's what that is. That's my service award of being like, good job, James. That's right. Thanks, Meg. Back at you. So all that to say, the gifts weren't like amazingly phenomenal. It's only 5 years, I guess.
Yeah, for 5 years, I imagine they're not the most amazing. But.
So all that to say, I actually did choose a watch for it, but it's like a dressy up type of watch. And so I was like, okay, so now I have my nice watch for when I don't want to be that guy.
I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, it's a black one actually with like a green second hand or minute hand that goes.
I'm gonna see if I can find it on that HP shopping site. I'm gonna see if I can sniff out your watch.
So all that to say, my current one is down for the count, and so I got a backup coming from HP in case it takes like 6 months for my Pebble to get here. I'm all bummed. I keep talking about it. I keep getting all excited and like, oh.
Yeah, I get you all riled up again?
You did, man. They send updates. It's like every 3-ish weeks or something like that, telling me what's going on, giving me pictures and sending a video and like, oh yeah, PS, it's not ready yet. Come on, guys.
Is it a fossil watch?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Is it this one? I'm holding up my, sorry.
No, it's black with, like black bands. It's not the silver type.
All right.
I don't know.
Good times. Great oldies.
It'll match my Google Glasses when they get here.
So James, I'm feeling like we're done with stories, but I have something to admit to you.
Admit away.
I have a secret admission. I feel like
secrets.
I feel like I'm kind of addicted to Kickstarter tabletop games. I've in the last probably 4 months backed 7 board games on Kickstarter.
7, huh?
Yeah. 2 of them are still in process right now.
That's cool.
I broke the seal on the Double Fine Adventure game that came out, or this I backed over a year ago. It was one of the first like $1 million March 13th, 2012. I backed this.
Wow.
Still have yet to receive the game. So speaking about awesome Kickstarters and not getting stuff.
There you go. So you know how I feel.
I backed a couple other board games. Kind of have a problem right now. So I don't know.
That's okay.
I've been thinking about like why it's my, see, here's my backing right here. So I have,
nice.
But I feel like, I'm trying to analyze why I'm into this. 'Cause my wife gets kind of peeved every time I back one of these. and I'm not backing, like, one was Werewolf, which is a, it'd be a good game to play with, like, you're a youth group or something. It's like, you can play with, like, 15 or 20 people.
Whoa.
And it's kind of a, like, deception, social kind of game. And, it was, like, $10 because they're just cards that kind of facilitate the game.
Oh, okay.
And then I bought another game called Coup. That was very popular at Essen Board Game Convention last year, but it had a very small publisher, and so a bigger publisher is now publishing for them. And that was $15, so that wasn't that expensive. But
those are reasonable.
Getting back to my point, though, I think it's because like I've been thinking a lot about the Kickstarter. I think it's fun to be a part of something, and so like I back it, and I'm like I get updates. I'm in the group. I'm in the club that's getting this. I'm getting my newsletter. I'm getting my updates. I'm getting, you know, stretch goals, you know, rewards. And like, oh, yeah, we got to sell more. We got to retweet this. We got to talk about it. Put the word on the street. Get some more people to back this. I don't know. It's kind of funny. Although I don't know if you've noticed in Kickstarter, too, because I think you've only done the Pebble, right?
Correct, yeah.
So I think this is kind of interesting. They show off, like how I don't do screen share and I just hold up my laptop. this like little thing is like a pie chart. And it's supposed to be like what all, you could back, you know, different types of things. So right now my pie has seven are in the purple games category of 7 things backed and everything else is blank. But it's kind of like, it's weird to me. Like, am I really going to – oh, I got to fill up my pie chart. I got to back a fashion.
Oh, they're trying to almost gamify it type thing where you want
to – I guess, but to me it's weird. I'm like, I don't know. Specifically, I look on Kickstarter and I look at tabletop games. And what the other thing I notice about tabletop games is the ones I'm backing are actually fairly established – board game manufacturers. They're not like a startup, and they're really using it. What I think is an interesting use of Kickstarter is they are giving Kickstarter 10% to manage their risk because they know exactly how many to publish plus a couple extra hundred or thousand to sell later. And that way they're not publishing too few, which drives the manufacturing cost too high. And then they sold out and they're not producing a bagazillion and where they can drive the economies of scale and get down, but then they're sitting on inventory for years. And so all these people are like, yeah, we do Kickstarter because we can know we're going to sell 2,000 copies of this game when it comes out and we'll make 3,000 and sell the other, you know, we kind of got a general sense of...
That's brilliant.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is they're using part of their margin to manage that risk because they're giving Kickstarter 10% of whatever funds they raise, right?
Yeah.
Which you could theoretically budget into the... I don't know. It'd be interesting to do some analytics or see some analytics on their Kickstarters because I wonder if they actually budget in... Like, actually, we need $5,000, but we're trying to raise $7,500 so that when we give Kickstarter our $750, you know, then we're – I don't know. It's interesting to me, though. Like, I feel like that's what they're doing is they're just – and some have come out and basically said that of, like, we're just managing our – that way we know the interest – the supply and demand before we even produce it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's something that they theoretically could do on their own. You know, hey, pre-order it, that kind of thing. But it's nice to get the distribution.
Yeah.
And let them manage all of that piece instead of having to build it out yourself.
But on the flip side, what's interesting is there was an article on Penny Arcade that was talking about there's another established board game manufacturer called... Steven Jackson Games. Let me see if I can find it. I'll put it in our show notes. But they're making this tank game, I guess they made like in the late 90s or whatever, called Ogre or something like that.
Ogre.
And they made this like crazy version of it. And they made, they got $1 million. But this board game is so, here, I just put it in the show notes. The board game, they're selling for $100. It comes with all this crazy stuff. But it almost, like, I guess they put out their year-end annual report. And they're like, basically, we needed to sell the board game for $400 to have it make financial sense. And so they were like, so they were talking about the kind of the getting caught up in the middle of a Kickstarter and the Kickstarter rewards and adding more and more and better componentry and parts and all that to the point where you're like, well, we're getting $1 million, but now we've increased the cost of goods on this thing to a point that's like almost unsustainable. We can't sell this actually in retail because we've made this crazy Frankenstein's monster thing. And, you know, it's, you know, it was interesting to me.
Huh. So they maybe mismanaged that one slightly.
Yeah, it says if it were a normal game, if it was sold at normal gaming markup over print costs, it'd probably go for around $400, but the retail for the base set is $100, and it'll be 7 months late, and it totally wrecked the 2012 schedule and is impacting 2013. And just about drove Phil Reed and Sam Mitski mad as they manage the product and may very well lose money on it when it all is said and done. And this was a Kickstarter that raised over they were asking for $20,000, they raised almost $1 million. So I don't know. Kickstarter is interesting to me. Like it's kind of got this interesting, you know, Pebble had the same thing, right? Where they sold $1 million worth of watches, and they're like, oh, this is going to cause some problems.
Yeah, well, I guess we should actually take this seriously and manufacture it correctly instead of just doing it in our garage.
Right, right. Hey, but you've only done one Kickstarter,
at least for now,
right?
I guess. Yeah, that's all I've done. Matthew's done a few more of them, but and he's actually gotten, I think he's received at least one
That's the other thing that Kelly's
back.
pissed at me about Kickstarter is because I have backed seven projects and have received.
Zeros.
But to be fair, I backed the Double Fine one, and then what started this recent trend? I've backed six of them since like late February, early March. Which is not,
Okay.
I guess, now that I've said that, and it's 2 months of time and I've backed six projects, it's kind of a little crazy. But, yeah.
Just it's the board game time of the year.
Well, and then just, I don't know, like I said, I get caught up in it. I'm like, almost like, yeah, I'm part of the group. I'm on the ground floor of this operation.
That's funny. That's pretty funny. No, I understand. I totally get it. I do. I think with the Pebble one, I watched that one for a few days. That was, and I got caught up in the fever. And then they changed one of the features, and I was like, I'm in, done, pull the
Yeah.
trigger.
That's what happens to me on almost all these board games is I star things and then I come and I'm like, oh, maybe I yep, get it.
It's okay. It's funny. Eventually they'll come in, and it'll be all right. You'll be like, there you go.
Yeah.
See, this was awesome. I
I'm
was a
sitting on
part
a
of it.
bunch of board games.
I like it. I like it indeed. So, as a final thing, final one here, have you had an opportunity to try out the new Yahoo Weather app?
I have not. I saw that you said it was beautiful.
It seems impossible, but it is gorgeous.
There's been a couple weather apps that have come out, and I'm just like, I don't. Sell
So
me on it. Why are you excited?
here's what's cool. All right, here's what's cool about it. There's three things that I like about it, and they're all superficial. Number one, I like their font choice. It's a good looking font, and just like, and the way that they've like their background shading photos, it looks like it was done by a designer, and so it's
Well-designed
pleasurable
fit.
to the eye, and I fall for that kind of stuff.
Me
The
too.
second one that I like is that to get information, all you need to do is scroll up, and then to see your different cities, you just scroll to the side and flip through them, and so it starts off with like just the hey, here's the weather, 50 degrees out, partly cloudy, whatever. And then when you scroll, you can see your hourly forecast, you can see your 10-day forecast. And then they'll give you certain details about like, here's what it feels like outside, here's the humidity, things like that. It tells you your precipitation over the time. It tells you your wind and pressure, which is actually kind of fun because it's actually a little windmill, and the more the wind, the faster it spins, which is just goofy, fun, pointless animations, but it's nice. It has embedded in there like the map that shows you where it's raining. I forget what that's called, but where it shows you like the clouds and yeah, where it's raining, which is nice. So it has all this information instead of having to tap through different tabs and wait for them to load. It's just all right there. But then, and here's the part that's going to get you. This is it. You ready for it?
Ready.
They have integrated it with Flickr. So that they will pick a photo from your area that represents the same type of weather and have that be the background.
Is it more real time on the weather? Like, does it actually show a picture? Like, if it's raining?
Yes. Yes,
Because.
they so here, let's see if this will work. I'll see if I can if it will actually play along right now. Let's see here. So I am in Albany. And so like right now out, and it's clear out. And so it has this picture that is some slight clouds with a moon, and that's it, which was taken by Night P on Flickr.
So are you going to start taking pictures? Are you going to get all your pictures in there?
I have totally, man. Why not, right? Because they'll all show up. And I, that would be kind of fun to see, wait around for it. So this guy, Night P, let's see here. This is, it's a full moon rising above the contrails. He stopped at a roadside park on the way home to shoot the rising moon. So you can tap on it and you can, you know, actually like the photo. I wish that you could like the photo or whatever in the app itself.
But was he in Albany when he took that picture, or was he just close?
Here, let me just see if it tells me. View more info about this photo. Taken in Riverside, Oregon.
Right, close? And it might be.
Riverside is.
I don't know either. I'm gonna look it up. And I imagine, like, if you were in San Fran or something, then there's much richer amount of photos.
Yeah.
To
so
pick from.
If I do Los Gatos, which has a picture of a clear blue, perfect night out, which it is because it's 70 degrees and fair.
Yeah, Riverside, Oregon, dude, is in Pendleton.
Oh, that's pretty
cool. Which is a ways away.
But this Los Gatos one is downtown San Jose, which I would
right.
say is pretty darn close. So their intent is, which is twofold. One, to get one that's pretty close to where you live, but then also accurately represents the weather, which I'm like, that must be some sort of crazy algorithm to be like, oh, yeah, no, this is a picture of rain, and this is a picture of clouds.
Yeah, that's weird.
So they do that. And I think, so one of Colorado Springs is partly cloudy. They've got a picture with part clouds in it with the mountains
wild.
By Mark Peck.
Huh.
But yeah, I just, it's just a very, very well designed, very cool little simple animations in it. I like it,
it's
surprising
heard-
to see that from Yahoo.
Yeah, as you probably heard from my discussion all evening, I'm a sucker for good design as well. So if it's – yeah, I'm usually
check
the one that follows for that on, like, wine bottles and that sort of thing. You know, like, like, ooh, pretty label. Mm.
Yeah, no, I think you'll like it. I think it's one of – their app icon is, like, it's super ugly, but –
Really?
Wonder. Yeah, well, it's just, I mean, what is it? It's just a big purple Yahoo with a sun and cloud thing. You're just like, you could do better. You could do
better. Have you made any vines lately? Are you vining it up?
No, I haven't, but I'm hoping to make a vine tomorrow.
So, you've got big plans to make a vine?
Well, I do. Since we're buying a house and we're closing tomorrow, I'll actually be going inside of it for the first time. I was planning on making a vine of walking in for the first time and just posting it and having that be the announcement that we bought a place. I was like, oh, vine will be perfect for this. Just a little quick 6-second threshold.
Nice.
Goofiness thing. Yeah, so...
Are you going to carry the bride across the threshold while making a vine?
Ooh. No, probably won't do that, but most of the
people... What if Jesse was vining you holding her while you're holding forward your camera double vine. You're carrying her across the threshold.
Oh,
she's vining your reaction to the vine that's happening forward vine. Multiple vine. I mean, just this is getting meta. Multiple vines.
I'm liking where you're headed with this, and maybe we can have some other third person just watching the whole thing with glasses.
Multiple angles with Google glasses. Record a video.
Do it. We'll splice it all together.
They could be total creeper because you won't even know. You just be, they just have line of sight. They're like in a trench coat just looking at you while you're doing this. Just observing your life. The future is now. It's beautiful.
It's here.
I think on that note, we should call it.
I think so. We should. Hey, thanks for taking the time this evening to join me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I thought we talked about some pretty cool stuff. It was fun. Well, I always promise you we'll have to get you back, so I have to keep my promise.
Yeah, let me know.
On here. Yeah, definitely. And thank you, everybody else, for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow, and my co-host here is David Perry. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Dutch726. You can see all the cool stuff that he's following and talking about there.
And all my Kickstarters.
Yes, that's right. you can see his latest investment strategy.
Yeah, if you want to get in on some board games on Kickstarter, just follow me. You'll be
there you go.
Right down the right path.
You know, all of them. That'll be perfect. Very cool. All right, everybody. We will talk next time. Thank you.